Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mike Heim to the broadcast. Mike is the Corporate Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Whirlpool Corporation, a $20 billion home appliance manufacturer operating in over 170 countries worldwide with 97,000 employees. In his role as CIO, Mike has been responsible for modernizing the company's infrastructure, driving the organization to take advantage of the Internet of Things and predictive analytics capabilities, all of which we cover in this interview. Prior to Whirlpool, Mike was a senior vice president and CIO of Eli Lilly, where he worked for 33 years. Mike holds a bachelor's degree in business from Marion University and a master's of business administration from Bowling Green State University. I recently caught up with Mike by phone, and we covered World-Class IT Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed Whirlpool's infrastructure modernization and the way in which Mike and his team manage security risks. Principle 3, project and portfolio management, as we discussed the governance program he's put in place to manage the massive projects he and his team have undertaken. And Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed how IT has worked with other parts of the enterprise to become more product-centric, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Mike Heim, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Hi, Peter. It's great to be with you here today.
That's my pleasure. Mike, you are the Chief Information Officer of Whirlpool, and I thought we'd begin with your purview as CIO. Can you describe the role that you and your team play within the broader organization?
Yeah, essentially everything related from almost product concept through manufacturing and ultimately selling and caring for a product in the hands of our consumers. So really all IT across the value chain on a global basis.
Coming into the role itself as CIO, had you been a customer of the company? Did you have any sort of preconceived ideas as to what it did well or what it did not? And I'm curious in those early days, sort of the situation you found and some of the things you did in the early stages to set yourself and your team up for success.
Well, that's a trick question. So obviously, yes, I was an owner of our products before I joined. Certainly, I was. The first washer and dryer I ever purchased was a Whirlpool product. And, you remember, those were always things that your parents bought. I still remember the joy I had when I had my own in my own home. As I joined, one of the things that was interesting to me was really being in a consumer products company. The beauty of it is we all use these products. We all have opinions. We all have friends who use these products. My wife jokes now that I don't go into anyone's home without walking through the kitchen and finding out what kind of products they have there. And then I might even sneak into the laundry room to see what they have. I think we sometimes underestimate our own value and our own ability to collect ideas around our products. And I think that's one of the things that really attracted me to join Whirlpool. So one of the first things I did was go see our products, whether it's in trade, our retail trade partners, how are they displayed in the store, what do they look like? Let's travel in the world a little bit candidly to see what do they look like in different regions, because in some ways they are different based on size or based on characteristics. And you find, just like one consumer is not the same as the next consumer, our products are very different across our brand and across the utilizations that they have. So for me, I'd sum it all up by saying trying to take an outside in look at Whirlpool and look at our company and at our products, I think is one of the best ways to learn as much as you can about what value you might bring.
That's great. And I like the way you sum that up in terms of the advantage of working for a company where you can be a consumer. So many of your peers as CIOs are in industries that are rather esoteric to certainly members of the IT team. And so your ability to know the product as a user and to know your own experience and how IT might play a part in improving that certainly must be an advantage. You're a little more than 4 years, not in fact, in sight of 4.5 years into your tenure as CIO. And so you've already surpassed the average tenure for a chief information officer. So I'm wondering at this point now, that far into your experience, what are some of the priorities as you look to the future? And as you think about the next the year ahead, or perhaps a bit of longer period of time, what are some of the things you and your team are working on?
I'll tell you, I am very fortunate to have joined Whirlpool during a period of pretty dramatic change and growth, and the opportunity that it affords us to focus internally on our own processes, to be a better enterprise, and to execute more efficiently in a more operational excellent way, as well as the product and the brand leadership that we have the chance to work on is dramatically different. So we have investments really running the gamut, Peter. In one regard, we're improving what I call the operational backbone of our company, which is essentially an SAP HANA upgrade that we're doing in each of our regions. And that's like back to the basics, if you will. Things that we've always done as a traditional IT function: design, improve business processes, connect across the value chain, drive out costs, drive up productivity. Then on the very other end of that, on the product itself, everything is becoming connected. And so I have the privilege in my team of actually working on product IT. And as an IT guy, that's a bit of the holy grail. We're not just back office, we're very front office. And we're not just front office, we're actually product, and we're actually in consumer homes. And so the consumer experience is both on product, if you will, as well as off product and what we do in the digital space. And so this convergence of our digital product and our physical product is really a great opportunity for us and a pretty exciting space for us to be in the future.
I know that part of what you are also working on with a broader set of the team is the Internet of Things, I mean, IoT-enabled appliances. Can you talk a bit about the progress made there, the role that IT plays in that, and sort of where you see that going, the value that will be derived for the company and for the company's customers ultimately through the Internet of Things?
Sure. We see tremendous opportunity in this particular space from maybe most importantly, in my mind, strategically, is a more intimate relationship with our consumer. We have a chance to actually know how they use our products every day when it's in their home. And through that, we have tremendous opportunities as we are connected and data is streamed to understand specifically what's happening, how it's happening, what condition the appliance is in. We can monitor for performance. We can monitor for a service needs if necessary. We can actually provide much better service in our call center if the consumer calls in and simply has a question about how to utilize a certain function, if you will, on the machine. So that way, it's very important to us. But that deep understanding of our consumer, all the way back to the product engineering and really connected from engineering design right through to utilization, we believe will have tremendous payback in terms of quality. One of the stories I hear internally is when someone calls our call center with maybe a simple question of how to use a feature on a product, the most difficult challenge that we have that impacts the quality of that call itself is actually getting the model number right. Well, imagine if the product is connected, we'll know exactly what product they have. We'll know exactly what feature or function they were trying to use, and we'll know exactly how to coach them through the process of applying that. So we believe we can add significant value to the overall experience of the consumer by connecting the physical experience with the digital experience. And that's just another great opportunity for us.
the whole topic of IoT and the opportunity that it represents, as you articulated, is one that involves multiple parts of an organization. And IT, it's frankly very heartening to hear that yours is a team that has front office and back office, customer experience, product type responsibilities, and not simply the kind of traditional responsibilities that an IT department might. I wonder who else you collaborate with across the organization, you and your team, in order to appropriately suss out the opportunities that IoT represents as you just articulated them.
Yeah, really, across the value chain, as you might expect. And one of the great things about Whirlpool is one of our core values is teamwork and collaboration. So we're not a company of silos. We're really a company of collaboration, and we do quite a few things to support and encourage that collaboration. So in this case, we would work with the engineering team. We'd work with the digital experience team that sits in our marketing function. We talk to the sales guys, are part of a cross-functional team. All the software design guys, application designers are critical to this process as well. And then the product teams that are actually thinking about functions and features and ultimately the consumer experience that we want to have and design and do our products. So it's really a broad collaboration. And we have an early engineering team, I will call it, or design team, that actually sits together in a facility that is a little more like what we would call a skunk works kind of team. We call it the garage, and cross-functional team actually sits together to ensure that everything from the global product organization straight through to the regional marketing and sales teams are all engaged understanding what we're doing, where we're headed, what opportunities we see, and collaborating to bring some of these capabilities to market as rapidly as possible.
I also wanted to ask you how you think about security. IoT is one of a number of opportunities that companies and IT departments are actively investing in many cases. And just as innovation is an exercise in risk-taking, there are also risks that need to be mitigated throughout that process as well. And I wonder how have you thought about baking security into your plans and into the products that are developed?
Yeah, you know, just this month I did my annual update to the audit committee. They have questions around that as well, Peter. So you're a very good company, I must say. We believe you have to design security is not something you do as an afterthought any more than quality would be something you do as an afterthought. And I think most manufacturers learned that a long time ago. So we very much take the same notion with security that we do with quality, that you design it in from the beginning. So we take what the way I've heard it expressed is a chip to consumer view of security. So everything from what's on the product to how it connects, to how we store and manage that information, to how we respond to queries, straight through to the consumer is all considered in a security architecture that we put in place to ensure that we're protecting all of that and managing all of that in the best possible way.
I also know that you were one of the earlier adopters of Google Apps a couple years ago, becoming early adopter, especially among some of the longer tenured Fortune 500 companies. Can you talk a bit about the rationale in that sort of migration, why you chose Google Apps and the advantages of having done so?
Yeah, I'm happy to. In fact, this is one of my favorite topics, Peter, so thank you so much for asking. When I joined Whirlpool, we were, let's just say, I'll be kind and say, a bit behind where I would have liked to have seen us be from a really contemporary, modern work environment. We were actually in the process of upgrading our facilities, which was great. And we have some very dynamic, open concept, high energy facilities, both in our headquarter building, in our North America building, as well as some of our international locations. So it was great to see that energy in our physical spaces. We were working very aggressively on the corporate culture. How could we become much faster in our decision making? How could we become a high accountability, high productivity, high performing organization? So culture really mattered. And then ultimately, how do we support those two legs of the stool, if you will, with the proper technology environment to enable anytime, anywhere collaboration? So we put a team together that looked at those three elements of our enterprise and ultimately conceived a program that we call the Winning Workplace. And the Winning Workplace really melded those three things together to create the environment, both physically and digitally, that we wanted to have in place to enable the culture and the productivity that we were chasing. So we went through a process of assessing offerings in the marketplace. We conducted a series of technology fairs, we called them, to actually bring employees into the process, our colleagues that were going to work in these environments, to say, with this kind of culture, with this kind of physical space, which set of tools do you prefer? And through that process, we ended up selecting the Google platform. The results of it have been amazing, to say the least. The utilization is very high. I love this. Some people have left Whirlpool for a variety of reasons, and I've gotten emails back from them saying, hey, Mike, I really miss Google. I don't know that I knew exactly how much I enjoyed it when I was there, but I probably take the chance now that I have it to say thank you for putting it in there. So your ability to work real time in the same documents is really what differentiates Google from others. And we've had a high degree of success and satisfaction with that. We measure our employee engagement every year, as many firms do. And we have one question specifically around, I've got the right tools and technologies to do my job. And that question alone got a statistically significant lift in terms of rating year over year with the go live with Google.
I know that you've led a number of big programs, some of which you've mentioned already here in your tenure at Whirlpool. And I wonder the extent to which any of those were born of IT, but needed to be sold, so to speak, to the rest of the organization, whose processes and tools would change as a result of the implementation of those. How do you think about describing the value proposition and the change management activities necessary in order to ensure that those major programs are implemented and ultimately see the value intended?
Well, that's an interesting one. I honestly believe there are very few things that IT drives on its own, Peter. The best value we have is where we're great partners and we're great collaborators, and we take a really strong business focus. So most things that we have, driven, to use your words, I would say we honestly arrive at those through a collaborative process. It's a privilege to work in IT. We get the benefit of not only a consistently changing set of challenges in our own space, but we get the benefit of engaging deeply with our business partners across all their processes and challenges and concerns. And we're probably the biggest lever on the planet right now in terms of what we can drive to be different. So it's a huge accountability, I believe, and a tremendous privilege at the same time. But I'd be hard pressed to say this is an idea we came up with on our own. Typically, we're so deeply embedded. If you looked at some of our teams working, I mean, our objective is to say, well, I can't tell the IT people from the marketing and sales people or the manufacturing people. So I think the ideas emerge out of that collaboration. So for me, that's what I would be that I'm most excited about when I see a team that's collaborating really well, because the innovation, the creativity just follows.
I'm also curious, again, given the size and scale of some of which you've undertook, what sort of governance practices you have put in place? Obviously, the larger the program, the higher the visibility, typically the higher the spend and the number of people impacted, and therefore the greater risks, one might argue, should something go awry. Sound governance practices to keep things on course and value validated throughout become increasingly important. What are some of the things you've done from a governance perspective that you think has helped you and your team along the way?
Well, this may surprise you, Peter, but this is a transparent answer. My team will tell you I really dislike the word governance, and I've struck it from our vocabulary in some places, but let me explain that a little bit. I'm a strong believer in accountability, and by that I mean the role of the leader is to create an environment that enables people and teams to be accountable. And if you create that proper structure and environment, and you really don't need to worry about who you hold accountable because people just behave accountably. And when you're all committed to the same outcome and you're accountable as much to one another as you are to, the organization or the structure or to a leader, you really get that commitment that's so important to drive a result. So I will tell you, we don't have governance. We do. I will tell you, we don't have all kinds of financial performance metrics that we look at. We look at project performance metrics. I was just in a steering committee today for the global HR program that we're driving. All of that is really important. But to me, the underlying piece that's important is, have I created a culture of accountability? Because if I do, the governance is more of oversight and support to the team, and that's what enables things to get done. I just find that to be very empowering.
In order to gauge accountability, are there certain metrics you put in place? Was there a cultural change necessary in order to tune the organization towards accountability? What were some of the things that you've, or mechanisms that you've used in order to ensure that people feel accountable and then deliver upon that accountability?
Well, certainly at a very high level, financial performance and project performance are all very tangible, and you can tell, are we meeting our metrics, and are we delivering consistently with our commitments, and are we driving out costs and improving our productivity? And then all the normal things that you would expect, we certainly look at all of those. Beyond that, it's a culture, again, it's my belief that enables that to happen. And, ultimately it boils down to, does the organization trust you to do things, and do we trust one another to do things? And the best way to build that trust is to make commitments and keep them. So we focus very hard on that. We focus on escalating. Often people view escalation as a problem or a weakness. And escalation is actually a strength, and I'm a big believer in very rapid escalations. And how do we support the team to accomplish the task? Personally, I don't think teams fail leaders. Leaders tend to fail teams. So how do we put the right accountability and engagement in place such that things that ought to surface, and they surface as rapidly as they can? And how do we bring the resources and skills and support necessary to accomplish those outcomes? So we spent a lot of time working on a mindset, much more so than I would say we spend time working on, DevOps discipline. If you get the mindset right, everything else follows. And we spend time as a team ensuring that that's in place.
I also wanted to ask you, we've covered a number of trends related to the Internet of Things, to security, among a few others. Are there other sort of technology trends that particularly excite you as you look out, say, 2-3 years into the future? Are there items that are making their way onto the roadmap that you're beginning to investigate as to potential value to the corporation and to your company's customers?
Yeah, this is a smorgasbord of opportunity, right? I have never seen a change, Peter, that's evolved as rapidly as the whole migration to the cloud, and I'll say it for shorthand, and then everything else that revolves around that. So, from a technology trend perspective, 3D printing can matter to us, it can matter to pharmaceuticals, it can matter to medical. One of the coolest stories I heard, my wife just had hip replacement surgery, and in the process of sort of preparing myself for that, you see where 3D printing now, they're going to apply that in the leading edge places to printing a new, if you need a knee replacement, it prints your knee. You don't get a small, medium, or large knee anymore. You get your knee. And I just thought, wow, what a great application of the technology. Certainly in our line of work, around our products, you can see 3D printing making a very different model for how you do spare parts or manufacture unique assemblies that might be necessary to drive some productivity. I think the whole, for lack of a better word, I'll call it the digital mesh that we're all going to live in, where all endpoints are connected, not just phones, tablets, PCs, you know, TVs, houses, healthcare, are all going to be connected in a way that enables all sets of different new capabilities, machine learning, smart machines, can produce, I think, a huge set of productivity and a differentiating set of services that are available not just to our industry, but to all industries. And, you know, those just a few, I think, are exciting. And it leads us to a, this is not really a technology, but it's, I don't know what you would call it. It's the reality of these ecosystems in which we're going to have to operate that go well beyond what we've done historically. And how do we integrate with whole sets of different players who in some cases may be competitors, in some cases may be suppliers, to bring capability and services in a way that the create value for our consumers. I think those are all really interesting opportunities for us.
Interesting to hear, and certainly interesting to remain abreast of as some of those make their way into the strategic priorities and ultimately potentially projects for the IT team. Mike Heim, thank you so much for joining me today on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing some of your perspectives. It's been a great conversation.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.